From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We all know what happened at the end of last May. There was a budget that was passed that was unbalanced. That's why we have a problem today. Problems need to be fixed. We are here today to be the adults in the building. And I will say that the House Republican Caucus, for the last 2.5 months, have been prepared to be the adults in the building. And we will be the adults today.
And anybody who is a grown-up and is prepared to behave like a grown-up should vote yes on House Bill 318. It is a painful vote, but the pain is not as bad as it might have been.
This is not a perfect bill. It's not a perfect solution. Some might say it's not pretty, but it responds to the governor's request. It responds to the problem. It ought to be supported.
I was never more excited than the day I walked into this chamber 6 years ago. I leave here with sadness and humility. For those whom I've let down, I will work tirelessly to make it up to you.
And the audio you heard there, Congressman Aaron Schock leaving Washington. And before that, we heard Illinois lawmakers let us know that they're grown-ups. They've solved problems, but it's not pretty. We'll talk about those issues on the show this week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Joining us is Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. Brian Mackey, a reporter for WUIS and Illinois Issues. And our guest this week, Mike Riopel of the Arlingtonite's Daily Herald. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
And it's good to have you there, and we'll start with you and Amanda. The legislature, they called it budget fund sweeps. Essentially, they went in and raided some other funds to help take care of the state budget for the remainder of the fiscal year, and they cut the state budget by 2.25% to also help balance the budget for the current fiscal year. So let's first talk about why we're doing this to fill $1.6 billion, and then we'll go with what is being taken away from folks and being given to whom.
So this stems back really to May, when the Democratic-led General Assembly, with all Democratic votes, passed a budget that they pretty much knew this situation was going to come to this. The hope, I think, for many of them had been that Governor Pat Quinn would win re-election. There would subsequently be an increase in the income tax, or it wouldn't have been allowed to expire at the start of 2015. Therefore, there would have been more revenue coming into the state, and Illinois would not have been in this situation. As we all know, of course, Republican Bruce Rauner won. The tax hike of 2011 was allowed to roll back some, and therefore no money to pay what has gotten a lot of attention and rallies at the Capitol was a state-subsidized daycare program that ran out of money that allowed low-income families to go to work or go to school but send their kids to childcare. Also, prison guard payroll and court reporters. You need that sometimes, or court proceedings can't go on literally by law in cases. And so we'd seen in various counties, for example, furloughs or even talk of layoffs. And there was, as I said, a whole bunch of rallies. That is the problem that Illinois legislators said they were going to solve. We had Governor Bruce Rauner talking about it in his budget address, saying, we're going to get this done. That was, of course, well over a month ago. At that point, he said he thought they were days away from an agreement. Clearly, about a month and a half later or so, it took that long to reach this compromise. And a compromise it was. It was bipartisan votes, although a whole lot more Republicans, at least when you look at the ratios, all Republican legislators voted for it, despite the fact that they're super minorities in the General Assembly. Democratic votes are needed just by the sheer number of them that are in the General Assembly, but far fewer of them went along with it. You saw in particular that a lot of the Democrats in swing suburban districts in the House voted no. Only just a dozen of the 39 Democrats in the Senate voted yes.
And it was important for that to happen this week. The reason is the daycare program ran out of money quite a while ago. The court reporters were going to run out of payroll on Monday. Layoffs and furloughs were already happening there. And lawmakers are about to take a two-week break from the Capitol. So all that came together for that having to happen this week. The governor got to declare victory. He got the budget fix he needed. And now all attention for the next couple months will turn on to the budget he proposed a couple weeks back for the following year.
Well, let's talk about victories. Are schools victorious under this?
They're going to lose money. As was mentioned earlier, there's kind of general across the board cuts of 2.25%, although if I'm not mistaken, programs to help developmentally disabled persons, mental health care was spared. But school districts are going to take a hit. Now, kind of mollifying that a bit, if you will, is that the legislature also provided the State Board of Education, I believe it was $97 million, to be allocated out to the school districts that are in the most severe financial distress because of losing the money that's being cut out of the general appropriation.
And that's significant because Governor Bruce Rauner, of course, is the education governor that had promised to give more money to schools. So some of his critics are kind of, I don't know if laughing to themselves is the right word or showing they're upset by pointing that out time and time again, that the very first bills that he signed into law, because is really almost as soon as the Senate had passed it, Governor Rauner signed both of these measures and made it a reality, that the education governor was cutting schools as his very first law as Illinois' governor.
Another area that they raided were road funds. What does that mean?
Yeah, that is something that is very important to a lot of lawmakers. Very important to have those projects, especially downstate. I think Charlie was about to point out that the Department of Transportation says that the money taken from the road fund won't immediately, you know, affect construction, won't immediately affect their most immediate plans. So they're hedging. They're saying, look, yeah, we had to raid this fund that everybody. Yeah, that is really important to everyone, but in the direct future, it won't stop any projects.
I thought one of the interesting things is that, as Amanda noted, virtually all the Republican lawmakers, I think there was one person in the House who was absent on that particular day, one Republican, all the rest of them voted for this package, including some downstaters who were enormously critical in the past of any attempt to take any money out of the road fund for anything. And now they find themselves voting green on a plan that sweeps $250 million out of the road fund.
Yeah, it's particularly notable, Charlie, as well, because Republicans, the charge that they would make is that they've been shut out of the budgeting process in the past several years. Democrats would counter that Republicans have taken themselves out of the budgeting process, and all the budgets that have passed in Illinois recently have been pretty much exclusively Democratic ideas with Democratic votes for them. And it just goes to show what a big change the gubernatorial election was. Now you have true bipartisan budgeting with sharing of pain and unpopular votes perhaps victory someday. But yeah, it is striking what a new day it was. And there were some questions. How many will the Republicans only put, negotiating? How many votes do they have to put on? Will it be the entire caucus or just part of the caucus? I thought it was pretty significant.
And as you have all mentioned,
it was a form of extracting pain. Sorry, Bill.
That's okay.
I mean, to me, it is telling in the sense that we heard as soon as Governor Rauner gave his budget speech, the takeaway from both Democratic leaders and particularly Senate President John Cullerton was, hey, this is going to be a shared government from now on. That means shared hardship. And this is a vote that if you look at, again, as I noted earlier, those suburban Democrats who voted against it, I think that's a sign that this is not seen as a popular move. Yes, it saves, quote unquote, these programs, but it's a whole bunch of cuts, and you could very well see this. There will be plenty more of this ahead, so who knows if it'll make it to campaign literature, but It could. And this was basically Senate Democrats saying, we're going to almost extract all the pain we can, require almost all of the Republicans to do this. Again, that I think you can't overstate how few Senate Democrats went along with this and really read into that in terms of a political dynamic.
Well, I think if you take it from a historical perspective, what we saw this week is kind of what the typical paradigm was for, decades when there was a Republican governor and a Democratic General Assembly. They would come together, the governor and the legislative leaders would work out a plan, they'd craft some compromise, and they'd do what's called a structured roll call, where they would know ahead of time who was going to vote for it and who was not going to vote for it. And leaders on both sides would spare individual members who might face some blowback later on, some real challenge in the election. And that's what happened in the House this week with the Democrats, where people in marginal districts got to vote no.
But not with the Republicans.
Or Democrats in marginal districts got to vote no.
I'm sorry, yeah. Yeah, it was Democrats and the suburban Democrats in particular who are in marginal districts. So they vote no, they can go home and say, I didn't support this plan. I think what kind of cancels out some of the negativity in a general election campaign is, so I'm a lawmaker and I voted for it. And you're my opponent and you're challenging me. You voted for this horrible bill. I can say, well, that's true. I voted for it. But on the other hand, so did your legislative leader vote for it. It was a bipartisan roll call. And so that, I think, kind of mitigates some of the potential angst that might occur in the November general election.
As we look at those kinds of things, though, it does show Republicans are going to have to be on board on a lot of these proposals in effort to get through, and they will be voting for pain at times, as you referred to.
That's right, Bill. I mean, more than anything, I mean, this solved an immediate budget problem, but it also gave a window to the future. You know, what is the full budget negotiation going to look like? Like you mentioned, Republicans are going to have to either all vote for it or mostly vote for it. Maybe they'll even end up having to carry the bills for Rauner's budget. Who knows? What we did see from the governor is some give as well. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the governor's introduced budget and the many cuts and the pension deal and all this stuff. In the beginning, from what we understand, he wanted very broad powers to be able to move money around to solve this budget crisis. In the end, Democrats wanted a lot more specifics out of him as to what his plans were, and you saw him give a little bit on that. So, you know, as we go for budget talks here and knowing what the governor has proposed, we know that, you know, he has in his government history a little bit of give, a little bit of evidence that he's willing to compromise at least a little bit on some things.
Yeah, and maybe, Mike, I would ask you, and then maybe if Charlie wants to weigh in, does this make you more or less optimistic about, you know, is this a template that we might see for the rest of the legislative session this year?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, the point is that this is the only thing we've seen the governor do with the legislature so far. So all you can really do is speculate from this point forward. One other thing you might consider is that if you have a budget where you need both parties on it, is the May 31st date so important? You know, every year the May 31st date is when they're supposed to have a budget done, and the problem with going past that is you need more lawmakers on it. If you're going to have Democrats and Republicans anyway, it gets harder after May 31st, but maybe it's not quite as a deadline as it was.
And
well,
I'll
and
add
May
real quickly
31st,
here.
The next deadline, I guess, would be July 1st when the new fiscal year starts. And as a practical matter, it would probably be sometime around the second week of July when the first payrolls actually would be forwarded to the comptroller's office for the checks to be cut.
And so you're already hearing a lot of talk about session running over into the summer. And this, of course, it's not just the budget. There's also union negotiations with AFSCME's contract expiring. And we know where Rauner stands on labor issues. And so this is all ongoing as well, which could play into budget discussions. I'll add, in terms of this model for the remainder of fiscal year 15 as one going forward, Senate President John Cullerton was asked about that directly and said, yeah, it seems like the governor has learned his lessons. This isn't a business where he can just say this is what he wants. He's got to work with us. And you need votes. It's not just a deal with the leaders. It's drumming up enough support by the actual people who need to push the green button. But he said, don't look at this as a template for the next year's budget. Democrats still very much are saying that they won't go along with these cuts. They see this as sad, bad for the budget, and that's not what they want next year. Yet Rauner has not moved off of his stance that he won't even look at any additional money coming into state coffers until the state cuts back elsewhere.
It would seem to me, though, a lot of the possibility of cutback or seeking more revenue, a lot of that can be done in the political posturing that leads up to whatever a final budget agreement is. So people will finally might have the cover to say, if it's presented in a certain way, that it was just unavoidable. But we are reforming state government and making cuts, and now we're also adding revenue. So.
Well, and you wonder why Governor...
I think it's set up that way, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, there were people who said last year that Governor Pat Quinn should have done this doomsday, you know, put more emphasis. He did present two budget scenarios. One, where he didn't really talk much about it, was kind of the terrible budget if we don't, you know, keep the tax increase at the beginning of this year. And the other one he said is, well, let's do this alternate budget, because by law you do have to present a budget that matches the revenue. But... you know, if the governor perhaps last year would have made this case, we're going to have to cut this. People are going to be losing health care. Kids won't be able to get their care. We're going to have to close prisons, do this, that, and the other thing. Perhaps he might have had an easier time selling the need for a tax increase. So, I mean, you can, or some sort of other revenue enhancement is the term of art that people like to use here in Springfield.
So, and it looks like, and this is no secret out there in the political circles, it is going to be the Senate Democrats and John Cullerton that look like they will be the ones that will do a lot of the posturing and playing the games, Charlie.
Well, I would say what the Senate Democrats will do is they will be in the forefront of protecting those programs that help the disadvantaged in society. The money that goes, for example, to mental health, or that goes to developmentally disabled people, or that goes to help people with substance abuse problems, all the kind of do-gooder programs that some of the more conservative folks aren't very supportive of. But they will also be right there when it comes time to raise the revenue to pay for them. They've proposed in the past, they proposed things like a tax on satellite television, for example, or a tax on soft drinks. Those maybe aren't the best way to raise revenue, but in my mind, it's clear that there is a significant support in the Senate Democratic caucus, and I would guess in the House caucus too, Democrats, for increasing revenues.
And Charlie, you mentioned earlier, it was kind of a flashback for you back to the Thompson and Edgar years.
Sure.
In terms of how this bill came together this week. Is that what you kind of envision things moving along like the Jim Thompson years?
I would like to see that. I think the fact that the governor yielded so much on this final deal, he basically came in and he said, look, I'm the chief executive officer here. I want the power to change things around however it suits me. And the Democrats said, no, that's not the way it works. You had one of three equal branches of government. Here is our position. The Democrats wound up making the kind of line item cuts that they wanted to make as opposed to giving the governor the power to make them. They also gave him the ability to shift some money around, and they gave him a pot of, I believe, $90 million that he could use wherever he thought it was necessary to prop things up. So there was a little give and take on both sides. And I think if Governor Rauner, as someone alluded to, has learned from this that you really do have to negotiate, I think there's a way forward.
Now,
I'm hoping that it will, for me, that it'll be like deja vu, like it was back in the day when I was an active reporter, watching Republican governors and Democratic legislatures go through all the posturing in the early spring to middle spring, and then when crunch time came, sitting down and saying, okay, we're going to put all this nonsense aside. here's the deal that will allow the state to go forward.
Now, State House reporters, the governor did manage, he made it to the Senate floor when that vote was over. I don't know if he was in the House when they voted or not. Can you describe any of the scene there?
I don't believe he was there during the actual vote, but thereafter he went to the floor and so, you know, shook some hands, went over to the Senate, went over to the House, was still in at this time. And so that is, you know, the sort of stuff that legislators say they appreciate, that they like. And the governor has continued to have groups of legislators over at the mansion. He has them for these brunches in the morning, has groups over afterward at when session lets out at the mansion, small dinners. And then he also held a Seder that had a lot of lobbyists, notably, I believe, pretty much all of the Jewish members of the General Assembly are Democrats, so it was largely Democrats as well as some lobbyists and such. So he continues to make those sort of overtures. And some people say it's helpful. Others say they remain a bit frustrated while he's having them over. He's not sure. They're not sure they believe that he's hearing them but not listening.
You're listening to State Week in Review.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and the Daily Herald's Mike Riopel. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Moving on to another couple of issues related to what's going on in Washington, or had gone on in Washington. One, Jesse Jackson Jr. got out of prison and has moved to a halfway house? Is that what they call it? Is moved into a halfway house for the remainder of his prison sentence for using his campaign funds for personal use. Aaron Schock, congressman from the Peoria area, gave a farewell address at a much younger age on the floor of Congress this week in the U.S. House, and we had a little bit of that at the beginning of the show. Aaron Schock went as far to compare himself to Abraham Lincoln, or at least dropped Lincoln's name into the speech. So from the remarks that Aaron Schock made, I'd be open for anybody's thoughts about Aaron Schock and his kind of saying that he wants to come back and rebuild the trust that he has with the people.
I think it will be very interesting to see where he lands. I mean, there's some sense in Washington nowadays that the fact that the news cycle is so fast and so overwhelming sometimes, that it's easier to come back from scandal. Like, you just need to sit out for a little while, and then there's going to be a place for you somewhere. Now, it may not be as a member of Congress, but I would guess we'll see him doing something in the politics or government world at some point. He's got to sit it out, cool it off. The scandal has burned very quickly over a couple of weeks. So when, you know, as the news cycle refreshes a few times, who knows where he might turn up.
Well, and I would say that his being able to sit back and cool off and all of that, it may very well occur at a federal bed and breakfast, because the U.S. attorney is looking into what he's done. And it's never a good sign when the U.S. attorney takes an interest in whether or not you've been telling the truth about your expense accounts.
Amanda Venicky, your thoughts and reactions to the comments you were able to hear from Mr. Schock on the floor?
I just feel like you could hear in his voice how hard of a speech this was for him to give, and the frustration by a lot of people, how much this affects not just Aaron Schock, but those who work for him and the Illinois Republican Party, for whom he had been a rising star. It's not just in D.C., but he'd been a prolific fundraiser, and that helped his home base. Of course, now we have Governor Bruce Rauner, who is clearly more than happy to put his own personal fortunes on the line for members. But it's been interesting to watch this, and I just go back to that speech, and you hear that Aaron Schock is not going to fade away. That's clear. He was an ambitious guy. He may be sitting it out now, and really a lot of this depends on what all happens with the federal subpoenas and grand jury that has supposedly been called to look into all of what's gone on. That'll have a huge role in what comes next.
You know, thinking back to what Bill also mentioned, Jesse Jackson Jr. going to a halfway house. Of course, he and his wife both convicted in that, and she, I guess, will soon be going to prison herself. The judge allowed them to kind of alternate their prison sentences so that one of them could be around for their children's sake, which was nice. But I did hear a comment last week that I thought was an interesting contrast. At least somebody said this, not me, but at least Jesse Jackson Jr. had the courtesy to bilk his campaign contributors instead of the taxpayers, which is what Aaron Schock is alleged to have done. But I mean, I do think that what this speaks to is a larger issue in both politics. It spans party, which is greed. You have to spend so much time asking rich people for money. You see their lifestyle. Maybe you begin to think that, you know, I deserve this lifestyle, instead of having that public service attitude that probably got you into that job in the first place. The quest for money in politics can have that corrupting effect on people, you know, allegedly in the case of Aaron Schock.
We'll take some time now and get some notes from the field, and I'll start with Charlie Wheeler.
Well, we've been talking about the budget fix and Congressman Schock's problems, but there were other momentous activity occurring at the State House. If you're someone who keeps tab of the state symbols, we have three pieces of legislation to create a new state vegetable, sweet corn, a new official state pie, pumpkin pie, and an official state polka song. Polka Celebration, which was, I guess it was a Grammy Award winner.
In 1986.
87, yeah. And that would join, as I say, 18 other official symbols, including things like the square dance, our state dance, the big blue stem, our state prairie grass, our state fossil, the Tully Monster, and this is the one I like. We have an official state soil, drummer, silty, clay, loam. And I'll confess I have no idea how you could tell drummer, silty, clay, loam from regular dirt.
And speaking of dirt, what's the dirt at the State House, Amanda Vinicky?
I actually am going to move to Washington, D.C., Bill. We have news that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is stepping down because of the prominent position that Illinois' U.S. Senator Dick Durbin has. There had been some thought that he would be rising to fill that position. We have no word from the Durbin camp on that. But Reid has instead gone over and picked Senator Schumer instead as his hope for a replacement. So we'll be seeing that battle for power play out, and who knows whether Illinois' Dick Durbin will rise or fall.
And real quick, Brian Mackey.
Yeah, I just want to note that there is a big effort to change the criminal justice system in Illinois. It got underway this week. The governor showed up briefly, but people who have been watching this issue for a long time, looking at Illinois' crowded prisons, say this could really be the one that finally makes a significant change in Illinois corrections.
And that's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Mike Riopel of the Arlington Heights Daily Herald for joining us. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search out State Week in Review on iTunes. Some will have better luck searching it out at iTunes U. Production assistance for our program today was provided by Brian Mackey. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.